Hi, everyone. It's Deb. Welcome to the Starving for God BBA workshop. It feels really good to be back. I'm so excited. I'm really, really excited for us to continue in this four-step inventory process and really start to look at the key that's going to actually set us free. That's what we get to talk about today, so that's exciting. We're looking at the realization. We're looking at the fourth column. So let's see who else is on the line. Go ahead and unmute yourself and say your name and where you're calling from.
I'm Cammie from Visalia.
Yay! Hi, Cammie. I'm so glad you're on the call.
Hi, Deb.
I'm Lynn, a compulsive eater, drug addict from Sherman Oaks.
Hi, Lynn.
This is compulsive addict and addict from 400 California.
Hey, Kimberly.
I'm Jan in Burbank, compulsive eater and many other things. Glad to be back.
Hi, Jan.
I'm Stephanie from Livermore, and I'm a food addict.
Hi, Stephanie.
Suzanne in from San Mateo. And I'm in a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Suzanne.
Hey.
Deb from San Diego, compulsive overeater addict.
Hi, Deb.
Hi, Deb.
All right, I think we have one or two more people on. You can introduce yourselves or not. But welcome,
Jack,
everybody.
Jack, and I'm a compulsive overeater.
Yay. Hi, Jack. So glad that you're on the call. Anybody else want to introduce themselves? Okay. Gosh, I mean, even just the people who introduce themselves, I feel like there's so many folks who have done this BBA work before who are phenomenal resources to be reach out calls possibly. So what I would love is anybody who feels available over the next few weeks to be a reach out call for someone else in the group who just, you know, wants a little bit more hands-on help. Please email me and let me know, and I'll include that in the playback link email because we really have a great opportunity to help each other, and we all grow. And, I just think that would be great. And then also, if you are available to listen to Fifth Step, so I kind of started playing around with some timing a little bit, just kind of looking forward. And, I mean, we still have our, you know, we've got to finish our resentment inventory, and then we still have our fear inventory and then our sex inventory. So we're not at the fifth step process yet, but I was kind of thinking as I looked at the schedule that sort of towards the last half of February would kind of be when we were doing fifth steps. So for those folks who would possibly be available to listen to a fifth step, if you can let me know that as well, and we can just start to maybe just start a little bit of momentum or a little bit of people kind of thinking about their schedule so that they can carve out enough time to do their fifth step and then give themselves time to do six and seven. So, and of course, we're going to be talking a lot more about that as it gets closer to the time, and nobody is going to be left hanging. Everybody's going to be taken care of and supported, and I just fully, fully trust this process, and I trust that the folks who are ready, who are saying, yes, I want to do this, there's going to be the perfect person to meet you right there and support you through the process. So I do want to do a bit of a check-in today, and we were talking a little bit before the call started, and it sounds like there's a few of you who are indeed caught up. You've completed all of your third column, and that is amazing. That is so amazing. What I wanted to do, and when we open up the call a little bit later for open sharing and questions and things like that, I wanted to maybe take a group conscience, because depending on where the majority of people are in the process, we can assign just doing the realization as the homework, or do the realization and the whole fourth column. So I just want to check in with people around that and see what's going to be in the highest. So let's just bookmark that conversation. Okay. And then just let me just add to that a little bit. So then what I was thinking is that if we did do that, then today I'm still going to talk about the realization and the fourth column. And then maybe next Sunday could just be another open group where I'm available from 2 to 4. You can come with your questions. We can kind of workshop a few things. And it's just an available sort of study session for people to come and to connect and to converse. So that's what I was picturing. But either way, I'm going to be talking about the fourth column and the realization today. So you can let me know what your thoughts are on that. Okay, well, without further ado, I think we can just jump into the prayer and meditation and then just get right into the meat of the work here today. So if you want to follow along with the set-aside prayer that we've been reading for the fourth step, for the resentment inventory particularly, you can join me on page 58 of the Big Book Awakening. Where it says, God, please help me face and be rid of. And let's start with the set-aside prayer and then go into this prayer. And then we'll do a couple of minutes of meditation just to ground and center ourselves. So, God, please enable me to set aside everything I think I know for an open mind and a new experience. Help me see the truth help me to face and be rid of the things in myself which have been blocking me from you, other people, and myself. Okay. So to just ground us into where we are in the work, where we are in our inventory process, we've completed the inventory process of that whole first page, right? So our column one, that person that we're resentful at, column two is the cause for that, and column three, we do this extended third column, and we get to start to see all these seven areas of self that have been affected by our resentment. And this is, of course, in reference to what we looked at in the step three readings of pages 60 to 63, where we get this analogy of being the actor who's trying to arrange the ballet and the scenery and the lights and directing all of the players. And sometimes I'm gracious, sometimes I'm demanding, but invariably I'm making decisions based on self, and I'm placing myself in a position to be hurt. And people step on my toes, they retaliate, and I don't think that I did anything wrong. And I start to see how this selfishness and self-centeredness is driving me. And it's driven by 100 forms of fear. And so as we go through this, you know, and I start to write out my extended third column, the seven areas of self in and of themselves aren't what the problem is. It's not a problem to have a self-esteem. You know, there's nothing wrong with having a healthy self-esteem or having a healthy pride. It's the sentence that I'm writing that's associated with that, you know. I'm the best catch that he could ever have, you know. I'm the most spiritual person in program. I'm the best daughter, you know, whatever, the best employee. I'm the best boss, you know, it's all that kind of stuff. And all these roles that I'm assigning myself, and then, of course, the roles that I'm assigning others, because I'm assigning these roles to other people, and they're not living up to the role or the expectation that I have placed on them. And so I'm irritated, or I'm upset, or I feel victimized, or I feel entitled, and that's all of everything that I'm seeing in my third column. I'm seeing what life is like when I am a self-will run riot. And as I look at all of that, I can also, with compassion, see that this is actually my best thinking. This is the best that I can do when I'm running on self. I actually can't do any better. And so that's where we are. We've been looking in our third column at the roles that we've assigned ourselves and that we've assigned others, and all of it's delusion because it's all based on self. And so just to review, you know, looking at, let's say, let me just go to Mr. Brown here. And so I'm resentful of Mr. Brown, the cause, his attention to my wife. He told my wife, my mistress, he may get my job at the office. We create the target. He's after my wife and my job. Then we look at the extended third column. You know, my self-esteem coming from a place of high self-esteem. I'm a good person, a good husband, and a good worker. Of course, the truth underneath that is really the fear. The fear is actually that I'm not good enough. And then pride. No one should want to take advantage of me. Of course, my fear is actually of being taken advantage of. Ambition. I want the respect of others. This is what I think I need out here in my life. The fear, of course, is not being respected. Security. What I think I need on the inside to be okay. Running on self. I need to not be challenged to be okay. I have a fear of losing. Personal relations is that belief that I have about how this relationship, how this interaction is supposed to be. And so I'm identifying what the relationship is. Well, this is a coworker. And so the sentence reads, fellow workers can trust each other. That's how I believe. That's my imagined sense of how this is supposed to look and my expectation of how this is supposed to look. And my fear there is that I'm unable to trust. Because remember, we looked at, you know, when when we did that example about 2 weeks back, I gave a suggestion that if I'm having difficulty when I'm doing my extended third column and I'm having difficulty identifying what the fear is, what I personally do is I look at my sentence, and typically there's actually a word in my sentence. In this case, under personal relations, it's trust. fellow workers can trust each other. And I kind of ask myself, do I have the opposite fear? Do I have a fear that I'm unable to trust? And invariably, I do, and that's usually the word that will go. So it's usually like my fear tends to be the opposite of exactly the words that I put into my extended third column. And then we get into sex relations. And remember, this always confuses people. Sex relations isn't referring to the person in column one. Sex relations is always referring to the person writing the inventory. It's always referring to you. So it's always, if you are a woman, it is always going to be a real woman. If you're a man, it's always going to be a real man. And it's not about them. It's about you. And so this is the role that you've assigned yourself when you think, well, the ideal person should be this way. This is how you're shooting all over yourself, right? So a real man, he says, stands up for himself. That's his imagined sense of what he should have been doing in this situation. And, of course, he has a fear of being weak. And then pocketbook, you won't always have a pocketbook with every inventory because pocketbook is specifically only if money was involved. But in this case, money was involved. So no one should interfere with my job security. And the fear there is of being fired. So that's where we've gotten up to, and that's where our reading took us up to on page 66. And now I want to go back into the big book and continue the reading all the way through to the end of the resentment inventory. So if you want to join along with me, I'm on page 66. And so we are the third full paragraph. So it's where it starts with, we turned back to the list. And this, by the way, is great. It's great when you do your transcribing alongside your writing your inventory. I know it feels like a lot of writing, and you're like, I'm just barely able to do my inventory. But it actually helps to illuminate more of what your experience is when you give yourself the opportunity to do the transcribing. So I still highly recommend that, especially because I get the instructions on page 66 that there's a certain place where it says end of instructions for column 3. So it becomes really clear for me. And then I go into this paragraph, and then it's going to give me more instructions saying this is where the realization comes from. And it helps me. This is where the fourth column comes from. So anyway, so we turn back to the list, for it held the key to my future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. And speaking of transcriptions, I love this transcription because it tells me the key to the future that I get from this inventory is what will set me free. Now, this whole time, since day one, we've been talking about getting free. And sometimes that term can seem so big that it's vague, and it's like, well, how am I doing that? And yes, the entire process is getting me free. But there is like a linchpin right now, an opportunity that we have to see something from an entirely different angle. And gosh, I can't even remember what page it would be in the book, but oh my God, of course. It's such a God thing. Okay, just turn to page 27. How does that happen? Anyway, okay, I just flipped to page 27, which is exactly what I was trying to find. And so this is where it's talking about Carl Jung, Dr. Carl Jung. And right in the middle paragraph, the doctor says, here and there, once in a while, overeaters and restrictors have what are called vital spiritual experiences. To me, these occurrences are phenomena. They appear to be in the nature of huge emotional displacements and rearrangements. Ideas, right, thoughts, emotions, feelings, and attitudes, beliefs, which were once the guiding forces of the lives of these people, are suddenly cast to one side, and a completely new set of conceptions and motives begins to dominate them. Okay, so I can now start to see that everything that I've written in the extended column of column 3 needs to be cast to one side. I need to start looking at this whole situation from an entirely different angle. And the term cast, we're going to be seeing that again in the fifth step. That is like a spiritual term. We don't have the power to do that with our minds. We can't go into a therapy session. Your therapist has never said, we're going to go ahead and cast out that fear of abandonment. It just, it's something that happens in a completely different realm, and it happens in that spiritual, mystical realm of this, of God and all that stuff. And so that's what we are, that's why we're involved in this process. But that's the key. That's the key, to be able to look at this from a different angle. We began to see that the world and its people really dominated us. So that's what I'm already seeing in column 3. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real. I love that they clarify that, because I make up a lot of shit in my head. And I'll share with you guys, when I finish this reading, I'll share with you guys, oh my gosh. In fact, I recorded, and because I was just teaching for this past week in Mexico, and so that's why we weren't able to have the call last Sunday. But I actually did 2 voice memo recordings for you guys that I'll actually send to you, because I was so in my shit on one night. The best that I could do was to record something to you guys, because I was so livid, and I want to talk more about that, because it's important to continue doing our 10 steps while we're doing our 4 steps. So I'll talk more about that. But fancy to real, I was making this entire situation up in my head, but I was pissed. It had the power to actually kill me. Oh my gosh. I mean, I was so far away from being connected to God. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than acting out with food in our body. Okay, so then it tells me that this is where I'm going to look to understand where the realization is coming from in the work that we're doing. So this is the question that I'm going to consider with each resentment that I do. This was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. But we did not like their symptoms and the way they disturbed us, right? That's columns two and three. They, like ourselves, were sick too. We asked God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend, or even myself. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, this is a sick person. How can I be helpful to him or her? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done. This is one of the most powerful, powerful paragraphs in this whole book, I feel. And this is an incredible prayer. And so it tells me that actually in my transcribing. Here is a prayer for anger and resentment while in the 4th step and in the future. I use this prayer all the time. And not just God save me from being angry, but also God help me see this person is sick just like me. Sick like me. How can I be helpful? Even if I'm not feeling helpful, even if I'm livid and it doesn't even feel authentic, I still say it. Save me from being angry, thy will be done. Doesn't mean that it gets removed immediately, but I need that prayer, and I use it all the time. So I want to share with you this experience. So I was, I invited a friend to come down with me to Mexico as my guest, because I was a guest presenter for a week, and so I got to bring a guest with me for free. And by the end of the week, I was really, really tired. I had poured a lot of energy into the whole week, and I felt very depleted. And she had come in, later in the week, and she was just, vibrant and cute and darling, and, everyone was loving her, and it was driving me nuts. And I was feeling almost like she was, outshining me, and it was creating this deep resentment in me, and I was judging the part of me that also was being in deep resentment at her, because moral and philosophical convictions galore, my philosophical conviction is that nobody can outshine anybody else, that we all can shine, and her shining doesn't dim my light or any of that kind of shit, and I could not get out of. Jealousy, anger, resentment, bitterness, I couldn't. It was just, it was like on me, like a thick cloak. And I was just getting more and more irritated. And then, and then a couple of things happened because we were asked to perform a song, sing as well, and I kind of like fucked it up a little bit, and I was feeling really ashamed. So everything was just getting worse and worse, and I was in a horrible mood. And so when it came time for I wanted to go back to the room, and she decided that she wanted to stay out. And so I went back to the room, and I was stewing. I was so pissed off that she wasn't coming back to the room to. You know, because here I was, and I was really tired, and I could have used a friend, and I was having a bad moment, and she was just being selfish, and she was going off by herself. And it's a perfect example of, I have so much knowledge, right? I mean, we're in our fourth step. I can see, I mean, in my head, I was, like, writing out an extended third column. Like, I'm the most, you know, worthy presenter here, and I'm the best friend, and, you know, and like, no one should leave, you know, I mean, I was, like, the entire thing, I could just boom, 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 you know, and you're, like, really in your anger, it's not hard to find those sentences, they come up really, really quickly, and I could see how I was needing her to, I had this expectation, I had this role that I had assigned her, and she wasn't living up to it, and I was livid, and on top of that, because this is also how it works for me. I'm irritated, I'm resentful, and I feel fat, and I feel ugly, and everything, it all, like, dumps at the same time, right? Because when I'm cut off from God, I immediately feel fat. I feel inadequate, I feel fat, I feel ugly, you know, like the whole thing. And so there I was, just, like, in my shit. And I did not have the power to remove it. I couldn't cast it out. As much as I knew I was in my fourth column, I didn't have the power in me. And I was saying this prayer over and over again. I'm like, God, please save me from being angry. And it wasn't getting removed, but it was the best that I could do, was just continue to pray that. And then I recorded a voice memo to you all, which I'll send to you guys. And it's actually titled Irritated, Resentful, and Feeling Fat. Because that was the best. And you'll hear. I mean, I was completely raw in my shit, not trying to, like, make anything sound fancier than it was. So I'll send that to you. And that was the best that I can do. And you know what? I didn't eat over it, which was the best that I could do. But I also couldn't cast it out. And when she finally came back to the room, because that was the other thing, I was exhausted. I wanted to go to bed, but I'm a really light sleeper. And I knew that if she came back to the room, whatever time she came back, it was going to wake me up. And so as exhausted as I was kind of like dawdling and not going to sleep. And so I started packing and I started doing all this kind of stuff. And the more every minute that passed that she wasn't coming back, I was getting more and more angry and more resentful because I wasn't feeling well. I was tired. And now she was being rude and inconsiderate by not coming back. And now I was going to be more tired and it was going to make me feel worse. And now I was going to get sick. I mean, it was, oh my gosh, it was insane. She finally gets back sometime like 1 a.m. or something. And it's so funny because this next paragraph starts with, we avoid retaliation or argument. I couldn't. I was so angry, I bitched her out. I totally bitched her out. Now, thank God it just so happens with this friend that she has a lot of grace in her, and she knew, like, she didn't retaliate because she's just a graceful person who's connected and knows that it's all about me and it's not about her. So she actually didn't, thank God, but didn't make it okay. But, you know, it didn't turn into this huge, like, back and forth fight. I was just completely out of line. And so, you know, this is why it's important for me to constantly, as I'm doing my fourth step, even when I'm in the fourth step and looking at all these past resentments, I'm still needing to be in my daily 10 step because shit comes up in all of our lives, right? And so, I mean, I did not have the grace. I was cut off from spirit. The best that I could do was not act out around food and my body and just pray and pray and pray. And what ended up happening the next day is I did actually record like a part 2 to this but I'll just share with you now just to kind of move on with the story, is because one of the things that I did was she had just early, I mean, this is the level of immaturity that I just, this is my best thinking when I'm in the extended third column. She had just earlier that day made this art and craft project of a prayer arrow where you like write a prayer, you make this little thing. It's like really, really cool. I dropped it on the floor. I didn't pick it up. Dropped it on the floor, and like that was the best that I could do with like trying to disrespect her by taking her prayer arrow, dropping it on the floor, and putting my foot on it and leaving it there on the floor for the evening. And the next morning, she got up and she was like, "Huh, how did my prayer arrow get on the floor?" And I was like, "Oh, I don't know." And in that moment, I'm like, I know I'm going to have to make an amends for lying. And like, this is just getting worse and worse, right? My problems pile up on me, become astonishingly difficult to solve. I mean, this is me and my addiction. And so anyway, after a meditation and after a grounding and everything, you know, I did approach her and I said, "I owe you an amends and I lied to you and I dropped your prayer arrow on the floor and completely disrespected you and I didn't pick it up." And she's her response was, "I knew you did." But and it's turning into this really, really beautiful amends process. You know, I went on and when we get to the amends process, we'll go more into that. But I ask every question that we do in the BBA, you know, "Can you let me know how this made you feel? Is there anything else that you want to let me know? Da, da, da. You know, how can I write this?" I mean, it will turn into a really, really powerful conversation. And the entire resentment was lifted from me. I was humbled and filled with awe, and it brought us closer as friends. And that is just, in a nutshell, what this program can do. That's why this is the key. Because it starts with me looking at this from an entirely different angle. And if I'm not willing to do that, and even if I don't have the power to on my own, that's why I have to submit to writing it out. And when I'm in my fourth step, you know, reading it to someone else, doing a 6 and 7, and actually taking this, running us through the entire process that we get to run it through to bring me to a place of true humility and willingness to set right these wrongs, to actually see. And so anyway, I just want to share that, and I know we all have our personal stories, but there's two reasons why I'm sharing that. One is, don't stop reading 84 to 88 and doing your daily 10 step. And two is, we are really, this is the juicy, juicy part of the work, I feel like, where we really get to, it's like a transitional place. It's a linchpin. This is going to take us through and set us through to freedom. This is the key. Okay. So ideally, we avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chances of being helpful. Yeah, I was not helpful at all. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. Okay, so let's talk about that realization first. So what I like to do in the realization, you know, it's really easy. Everything that we've been looking at so far is how the world and its people have dominated us. And I'm seeing that in columns 2 and columns 3. And it's very easy for me to be in a blaming space or to be like pointing the finger and thinking like they're wrong and I'm right. And then sometimes there's this deeper fear of, well, shit, I have to make them wrong, because if they're not wrong, then it means that I'm wrong and they're right. And, what does that mean? And what I'm going to offer to you is that, what if neither of you are wrong? What if it's just two people who are spiritually sick, two people who are on the path, and we're all growing? And so there's a range and there's a spectrum and there's a scale. And like on any given day, I mean, oftentimes when I'm sharing with you all, I'm at a certain place in my spiritual connection, because it actually connects me to God simply just to be doing what I'm doing. But as you can hear, just a day or two ago, I was probably, like, you know, registering at, like a negative zero, negative 54 or something, you know, in, like, in the range of where I was in my connection to God. So on any given day, so we can start to look at this person in column one and say, well, hang on a second. This person, maybe, is it possible that this person is just doing the best that they can? And just like in my third column, that's me doing the best that I can. And it starts to just change things a little bit. I'm looking at this from a slightly different angle. And it starts to equalize the whole situation. And so let's go back into Mr. Brown and let's look at how that works. So if I look at my cause for Mr. Brown, my cause is his attention to my wife. He told my wife of my mistress. He may get my job at the office, and then there's the target. He's after my wife and my job. So when I look at the realization, I'm actually going to take each one of those statements, and I'm going to ask myself, have I done this exact thing to this person and or others? So let's see. So we look at the realization for Mr. Brown, and we see I've flirted and been appropriate around other men's wives, especially when drinking, and I've competed at work for other people's jobs. So he's done exactly what Mr. Brown has done, and possibly even to Mr. Brown. The way that I personally like to do it is I like to take it verbatim because it helps me really, really see where I'm sick just like that person. And so when I read some of my examples, you'll see I actually take the exact wording, and that's how I suggest that the people who do, you know, sponsees of mine that I work with, and like I suggest they do it that way because it just makes it really, really clear. But let's say somebody stole from you and you've never stolen before. But can you broaden that to, have I ever stolen somebody's peace of mind? You know, have I ever stolen time and energy? I mean, so sometimes we can kind of take that and we can get a little bit more, we can scale it out a little bit and get to the essence of, have I ever, like, for example, maybe somebody hit you. Somebody pushed you, and maybe you've never been physically violent to somebody else, but you can ask yourself, well, have I ever overpowered somebody else before in a situation? Have I ever been, you know, forceful in my approach with somebody or something like that, you know, where you can kind of ask that. So, and of course, it helps a lot more when you have real-world examples and we can look at them and we can kind of come up with something that that is more relevant. But this is looking at things from an entirely different angle, this realization. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to go back to some of my examples and read you the realization that's associated with those so that you have those examples. And then we can go into the fourth column, the conversation. And then I'll read my examples for that, and then we can open the call up. So this first friend that I've been reading to you guys, I'm just going to give her a name right now so I don't have to keep on saying this friend. I'm just going to make up the name Sarah. So I'm resentful at Sarah because she's oversensitive. She cries too hard to prove she's worthy. She needs to announce her recovery all over the place. She's refuses to do the real work. She's high maintenance. She uses people. And I didn't get value for my money for the work that she did. My target is that she's an insecure, oversensitive, spiritually bypassing user. Okay, my label for her. My self-esteem, I am the most spiritually connected person. Fear of being not recovered, in my eating disorder, ineffective. Because I also have, I'm a secure, effective contributor. So fear of being ineffective and insecure and not contributing. Okay. Pride, no one should reject my program of recovery, fear of not being valued and of being rejected, and ambition, I want others to get with my program of recovery. I want people to do what I do. Fear of not being seen and fear of being powerless. Security, I need others to do my program of recovery to be okay. Do you see how that's kind of a little bit different than just what I want to have happen out here in the world? But, like, I actually need that to be okay. Like, I'm not okay unless other people do recovery the way I think they should. It's kind of fucked up. But that's what I believe in my security statement in my third column. It's my best thinking. Fear of not being recognized. Personal relations. Okay, so this is, she's a friend of mine, so this is my belief about how this is supposed to look. So friends are grounded, adaptable, and secure. Fear of my own inflexibility and rigidity, and of not being grounded, and of being insecure. And then sex relations is actually about me. So this is how I think I'm supposed to be in this situation. A real woman loves and accepts her friends as they are, doesn't judge, and is helpful to them. Okay. So I have a fear of being not accepting, of not being loving, of being judgmental and intolerant. There was a pocketbook with this one. No one should do work for me that is subpar, and this is the mark. Fear of being a waste of time and money. Okay, so that's my extended third column. Now, what I like to do, and this is why I like to actually print out the first page and the second page on separate pages. I know that that's not the most green thing to do, so if you are going to do a front and back thing, that's like more power to you. You'll just have to do a little bit of flipping back and forth. But what I do is I actually take that page out and I place it side by side with the second page. And at the top, right before I go into the realization, it has that little prayer. It just says, God, please help me see the truth. And so I say that prayer because I really need God to please help me see the truth, because this is what is going to help me see things from a completely different angle, and this is the key that's going to set me free. So how have I done the things I've resented in column two to the person I've listed in column one and or others? So, again, if this is not a column, if column one does not have a person in it, if it's an institution or a principle, you don't need to write a realization. I personally oftentimes find that even if it is an institution, typically there is still some kind of realization that I can find, because oftentimes there's like one or two people that really stand out in my mind that represent that institution, and I actually do. So institution, I sometimes still write a realization, but principles, you don't write a realization. Okay. So my realization, I ask myself, I have tried too hard to prove that I am valuable and worthy, both to Sarah and others. I've been oversensitive to Sarah and others. I have, I didn't read you guys all of the things that were in my cause, so that's why I'm kind of just trying to, like, go through and read you the ones that I just did. But I have needed to announce my recovery all over the place to Sarah and others. I have refused to do the real work with Sarah and others. I have rejected others' programs. I have been super high maintenance to others. I have been selfish to Sarah and others. I have used people and been a leech to Sarah and others. Okay. So I actually take each phrase and I put it and I ask myself, you know, I see the term, she's super high maintenance. So I ask myself, have I been high maintenance to Sarah? And I'm like, I wasn't actually high maintenance to her, but I'm definitely in my life, oh my gosh, I've definitely been high maintenance to others. So I write, I've been high maintenance to others. And I take it each phrase like that. And that really, really helps me. Let me read you another one. This was actually a friend of mine, and I didn't read you this one, but I'm gonna just go through it, and then because she's kind of an acquaintance, and then I'm just gonna read you my realization for her. So I'm gonna call her Carol. Okay. So I'm resentful at Carol. The cause: she's complicated. There's too much processing. She's difficult, and there's issues with everything, and she's weird, okay? Self-esteem: I'm emotionally healthy and have a good gauge on reality. Fear of not being emotionally healthy and no gauge of reality. Pride: no one should make an issue out of everything. Fear of making an issue out of everything. Ambition: I want her to go away. Fear of actually like negative energy around me. Security: I need those who don't jive with me to go away, to be okay. To be okay, I need you to not be in my vortex. I mean, that's kind of crazy, but that's what I said. I need those who don't jive with me to go away, to be okay. Fear of being like encroached upon or imposed upon. Personal relations: real acquaintances don't require so much work. Fear of complication and of being complex. And then sex relations: this is about me. A real woman is loving and tolerant and doesn't get triggered. And it's interesting because, and we'll talk more about this when we're talking about the fifth step process and you know, five and six, and looking to see what's objectionable. But what oftentimes comes up a lot for me when I'm looking at sex relations is this like spiritual la-la land that I get into about how I think I'm supposed to be, and I'm never supposed to be triggered, and I'm always supposed to be happy, and I'm always supposed to be loving, and I'm always supposed to be tolerant, and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, that's actually a bit of delusion as well. So, you know, because I'm human, and sometimes I'm intolerant. Sometimes I'm not loving, and that's why I need to do a daily 10 step, because I'm human, because stuff comes up. So fear there of being judgmental, of being intolerant, and of being spiritually blocked. The pocketbook here: no one should say that they are buying something from me. She was buying some jewelry from me. No one should say they're buying something from me and then give it back. Fear of being punished. Okay. So my realization with Carol, so I placed this page side by side. I have been complicated and too much for Carol and others. And I really sit with that for a moment. I don't just write it. I actually consider that, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, this is so true. And I think about all the people who I have been completely complicated and too much to. And it really, really levels me. It really humbles me. And, I have done too much processing with Carol and others. I have been difficult for Carol and others. I have made an issue of everything with Carol and others. And I have been weird with Carol and others. I mean, literally every single thing that I wrote in my cause, it actually is true. And so I start to see that it's not that, oh, this is a sick person and God, please help me from, you know, save me from being angry. It's, oh my gosh, this is a sick person just like me. And maybe on the day that she really, you know, pissed me off, maybe she was operating at like a level 2 and I was operating at a level 5 on that day. And so I'm coming from a place of higher self-esteem. But, you know, on another day, I might have been operating at a level 1 and she was operating at a level 7. And we're just all in the process, you know. And so it really, really helps me to see that. So I think you get the hang of that. I don't think I need to read another one. I was going to read my ex-boyfriend, but I think you got the hang of that. Of course, when we open up the call, we'll go over them in real time, which always helps a lot more. I want to get into the fourth column and talking about that. So let me go back to the book. So it says, referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs of others, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. Though the situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other person's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set these matters straight. I want to clarify something. Some people sometimes will actually start to feel like they're being set free just by doing their third column, because they start to see the ridiculousness of the play, and they start to become less attached to this being the truth and more seeing it as, oh my gosh, these are the stories I'm telling myself, these are the expectations that I've created, these are the ways that I am actually creating this pain and drama in my life, because I'm looking at the drama of my world. Some people get freedom then when they do their realization, because they're like, holy crap, my entire life I have been resentful at my mom or my dad or my sibling, or this whole time I've been working at this company, this boss or this coworker or this friend, you know, this childhood friend who did, you know, that dirty so-and-so who did X, Y, or Z to me, and I've been holding on to this. And then sometimes sitting in that realization and considering, oh my gosh, I've been pissed off that my dad left, and yet when I ask myself, have I abandoned others? I've abandoned others my entire life. Holy shit, I am sick just like this person. So some people get a lot of freedom in that. And some people get freedom when they start to look at the fourth column, and they start to look at, okay, if I disregard that person entirely and I just start to look at, where am I showing up in this? Where am I at fault? Where are my mistakes? We're not looking at parts. So you'll notice that I don't use the languaging, what's my part, because the implication then is that the other person has a part. And like I just wrote about, like I just spoke about, you know, on page 66, fan feet are real. Like sometimes I'm making this shit up in my head, and the other person doesn't even have a part. So it's not about like, oh, I'm going to own this, and then I'm still holding on to the expectation that you've got to own your half. Like, this is just, I'm talking about it in terms of my mistakes, where am I at fault, what's mine to look at, what's my inventory here. And some people find freedom in that. And some people won't find freedom in writing all of this out, because they're going to find freedom in 5, 6, and 7. Because remember, we still don't have the power to change any of this. We're just getting deeper and deeper, soul excavating, getting one layer deeper and deeper. You know, God is shining that light and helping us see just one step in front of us so that we can start to get deeper and deeper. And we're having this experience, but we don't have the power to fix it or change it yet. I mean, we don't get the power to fix or change it, but it's not necessarily fixed or changed yet. So some folks that are doing this process are going to already start to feel some freedom, and some folks aren't. And I just want to validate that nobody is wrong. Just by doing this doesn't mean that you're going to feel freedom, okay? And if you do, fantastic. That's great. So where are we to blame? Okay, so I'm going to now go back into Mr. Brown. And now I'm looking at, okay, so I can say this prayer to myself before I look at the fourth column. God, this is a sick person like myself. How can I be helpful to them? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done. And I personally don't move into the fourth column until I've actually given myself a moment to sit with my realization. And when I'm listening to a fifth step, and we'll talk about this more, but I just want to share it now in case this detail, you know, escapes me when I'm talking about the fifth step, is that I have people pause. I have them actually really connect with that truth of, can you feel like this person is sick like you? And we don't actually just move on into the fourth column until there's an experience that's had with that. So then I'm actually able to disregard the other person involved entirely. Now, does that mean that the other person did nothing wrong. No, the other person might have done something that was harmful. You know, in some cases, we have a resentment against someone who, like, really hurt us or abused us in a certain way. It doesn't mean that in this case that we are somehow that they're perfect and they're an angel. That's not what this is about. It's just that I'm disregarding that so that I can focus on my inventory. Where was I to blame before, during, and after? What did I do? Now, I also want to make a note here that if there was a child abuse or molestation thing, you absolutely, you know, you do not need to write in a realization. There was nothing for you to have to own or take responsibility for as it relates to the abuse or the molestation that you experienced when you were younger, you know, or if you've been victimized, if you've been raped in that kind of way. Absolutely not. So I do want to clarify that. You don't have to, you know, take responsibility for any of that. As we get into looking at the self-seeking and the selfish and the dishonest and afraid, I'm going to give an option for you about how you could possibly choose to look at the situation, which is your choice to do, and that's something that we can talk about more offline, or you can talk to your sponsor about, or if you feel comfortable, you can bring it up and we can kind of talk through the specifics of your situation. But what I'm looking at here is looking around the whole resentment. So look at the things that I do to hold on to this resentment, and it might be things that I'm doing to protect myself. So giving some examples here, how I shun and I gossip and I yell, holding on to the story, or maybe there's something that happened to me a long time ago and now I'm holding it against every other person that I meet. So let's say I had a father who abandoned me, but maybe as I'm looking forward, now I can see how I'm now treating every man that I meet a certain way because of that. So there's ways, and let's say there was an abuse situation that happened, and maybe I was molested or raped as a little girl. There isn't something for me to realize about my, you know, to take responsibility for my realization, but maybe if I feel like this is where I want to go with this inventory, if I feel guided to go here with the inventory, maybe I want to look at some of my selfish actions and attitudes about how I am behaving in my life as a result of that. Do I distrust everyone? Do I withhold love? Do I abandon others before they can reject me? There's a whole list of things that could possibly happen about how I'm carrying that resentment with me and I'm acting out in my life. So when we get into this list here, self-seeking, where had I been self-seeking? Where had I been selfish, dishonest, and afraid? I'm going to use other buzzwords in place of those terms that make it a little bit more, for me, make it a little bit more clear about what goes in each spot. So you'll notice it says self-seeking here, and it says, look around the whole resentment. What did I do? Where was I to blame? My selfish actions or activities. So I actually, when I'm doing the work with people, I just say, just consider this first one your selfish actions. So self-seeking is about your selfish actions. So actions are verbs. So I don't get into a lot of story here. The example that they have in the packet is actually a little bit different from how I do it. I'm going to read it. Neither are wrong. I'm going to share with you kind of how I do it. I really stick to the verb, kind of like it says in the example, like I shun, I gossip, I yell, all that stuff. So here, the selfish actions, he kind of gives sentences. So drank too much at the office party, overreacted to Brown's conversation with my wife, fought with Brown at the party, punished my wife over the situation. But you can kind of see where he's still focusing on the verbs, right? Drank too much, overreacted, fought, punished, underperforming, like not doing well at work, absenteeism, missed a lot of days, blaming Brown for my job insecurity, giving Brown a hard time. So it's still very factual and really focused on, like, the actual actions that happened. So, like, where the one, that the resentment inventory that I just read you on Carol, my self-seeking, when I look around the whole resentment, what did I do? Where was I to blame? I look at my selfish actions, and I can see, well, I was talking shit. I'd been writing her off. I've been making assumptions. I've been ignoring her, giving her the cold shoulder. I've been distrusting of her motives, okay? And the one that I had, the other friend that I'm calling Sarah, my selfish actions, I've been judging her, ignoring her, character assassinating her, you know, like I wasn't overtly talking shit about her to somebody else, but I've been assassinating her in my own head. I'll take that back. Talking badly or negatively about her to a friend of mine, and that friend of mine, that's going to actually go in my harms. I'm going to write that friend's name down because it's a harm to that friend that I was talking shit about Sarah to her. So I like to kind of keep it more like the verbs. If you're guided to write out little sentences like that, go ahead. I just invite you to consider not putting a lot of story there. Okay, so that's the first one. So self-seeking is my selfish action. But then I want to say, okay, when I was doing any one of those actions, what was I thinking? What was my selfish thinking? And so the next section where it says selfish, what was my selfish thinking while I was doing the above actions, that's where I want to get into my mind. Now, it helps me actually write the selfish thinking the way that I'm thinking it. Not like the way that he has it here, like no one interferes with my life or tells me how to behave. Like it's coming from the place of this is actually what I'm thinking in my head, as opposed to writing something in there that's coming more from like an analytical perspective, like that you're analyzing your thoughts, like my selfish attitudes. Well, I was judgmental and feeling defensive and da-da-da-da-da, like kind of like that. I tend to not write it that way because I like to actually get into the embodied experience of what I was thinking. And so what helps me is to take any one of the selfish actions that I feel like really, really charged up about, and then I ask myself, okay, when I was doing that thing, what was I thinking? So let me give you an example. When I look at Carol's one, and one of my selfish actions is ignoring and giving her the cold shoulder. My attitude when I'm ignoring her and giving her the cold shoulder is you're too much. Like you're too much. I also have one that I didn't write down, which is probably just like I'm better than you, but I have that on many others. So I think I have that on the one that I wrote on this friend Sarah of so character assassinating her, talking badly about her and judging her. My selfish attitude, I'm better than you. Absolutely. And another attitude I had was you should be doing recovery my way. But, like, I think it all boils down to I'm better than you. A lot of times I have, like, I'm better than you, I'm right, because I think that a lot. So that one comes up a lot in selfish attitudes. Some of the things that also help me in selfish attitudes, I ask myself two questions. I say, where am I feeling like a victim, and or where am I feeling entitled? Because that's usually where I can start to see more truth about my attitudes. You know, like, let me see if I can find a good example here. I'll use one from my ex-boyfriend. Um So this is the ex-boyfriend who is arrogant. He doesn't see me or get me. He's immature. He's the child in the relationship. My target is that he's invalidating. He's immature. He's an arrogant fixer. And when I look at the realization, I have to look at I have been arrogant to him and others. I've been invalidating to him and others. I've tried to fix and rescue others and him. I've been unable to have deep, intimate, and mature conversations. I've been the child in, you know, love relationships with others. I look at all this stuff in my realization. I really sit with, oh, my gosh, he is sick just like me. Like, we are actually on the same page here. Wow. And I it humbles me. And then I'm ready, after that ego's wiped clean, I'm ready to move into the fourth column and really get free. Like, what is mine to look at? And so I look at my selfish actions, and I see that I've been judging him. I've been talking shit. I've been intentionally flirting with his roommate and closest friend. I've been punishing him. I actually went as far as I wrote a poem that didn't have his name in it, but I wrote a poem that I put on Facebook that was so obvious that it was about him. And I've been trying to manipulate others' perception of him. Okay, so those are all my actions. My selfish attitudes, I'm too good for you, right? That's that entitlement piece. And the victim in me, well, this is also kind of the entitled piece too, but the victim in me is like, you know, like, you'll realize one day how dumb you were not to do everything you could to keep me, you know? You're too blocked to see my brilliance. That's part of the entitled one too. But I asked myself, like, where am I feeling like a victim? And I probably could have come up with a sentence there about, you know, how he's not seeing me and it's not fair. And so that, hopefully that helps you there. Then I go one step deeper and I look at the lies that are driving the delusions. Sorry, that was confusing. The lies that are driving my attitudes, that are driving my actions. And so the dishonesty is about my delusions. And, you know, we get this analogy, I think that Dan Sherman talks a lot about, and I talk a lot about this as well, and I think I've mentioned it before, we get this image of a tree. Right, and the leaves of the tree are kind of like my actions, and they're kind of like out here, the actions, and then you kind of get into the branches, and those are my attitudes, my selfish attitudes, kind of going a little bit deeper, and then you get to the trunk, and that's like my delusions. Those are the lies that I'm telling myself, and then I get to the roots, and those are my fears. And so I'm starting to get deeper and deeper into this. And so these lies that I'm telling myself are driving the attitude. So what are some of the lies that I'm telling myself? Well, let me go back to this friend, Carol. So I'm ignoring her the cold shoulder. I have this attitude that you're too much. I'm in the delusion that I'm right and she's wrong and our issues are her fault. That's my delusion. I'm sure there's many other delusions, but that's just the one that I wrote in there. The fear that's underneath that delusion is I actually have a fear of being in the wrong. I have a fear of it being my fault. And, like, how much does the fear of actually being wrong and things being my fault, how much of a theme is that in my life? Like, that is a theme in my life a lot. And so this person becomes a representation of many, many people in my life that when I have this deep, deep fear, when the root is that I've got a fear of being wrong and it being my fault and of being, you know, complicated and of being, you know, difficult and all those kinds of things, all those fears that I have that are deep down, it's so uncomfortable to feel that about myself that I create the lie, I drive the delusion that I'm actually right and that she's wrong. I kind of point the finger, I take it outside of that really inadequate sticky place, and I start to project out into the world, and I create this lie that makes me feel better, and it gives me a sense of power and a little bit of ease and comfort, right? So it's your fault. It's your fault. And that drives the selfish thinking that you're too much. It's your fault and you're too much. And then it justifies my behavior. It justifies my behavior. So what tends to happen in a lot of therapy and a lot of middle-of-the-road solution, meetings and when people are going through the steps and they're still kind of treating the 12 steps like self-help, is you'll hear people saying, well, I'm working on my resentment, or I'm working on my character defect. And that's kind of like trying to trim the leaves and kind of manicure the branches of my tree. And what happens is that it just simply grows back. Because all I'm doing is at a very, very surface level, I'm just trying to like modify and behavior modify and like kind of like control and fix and change certain ways of showing up. Like, oh, I'm selfish. Well, I'm going to try to be more grateful. I'm just going to try to do esteemable acts. You know, we're trying to like fix our deep-seated issues by changing our actions. And what this process allows us to do is it allows us to go all the way down into the tree, down underground, into the roots. And just like it told me in Bill's story, this is going to be uprooted, root and branch. This entire structure is going to fall down like a house of cards because it's all based on fear. And I'm going to be able to move through that as God casts this whole situation out of me. So I'll just read the last little bit of the of one of my other inventories, and then we'll talk about harms, and then I want to open the call up. So this friend, Sarah, I've got, sorry, now I'm all over the place. Okay, here we go. So I'm judging her, I'm character assassinating her, talking badly, I have this selfish attitude, I'm better than you, and also that you should do recovery my way. I'm in the delusion that I have the only solution and that she should follow my suggestions for recovery. I mean, arrogant? Yes. But that's the delusion. And what's really it's really hard to find a delusion, I like, for a lot of people. This is where it's really helpful to have somebody help you with this, because I'm living my own lies. Remember, it told me that in the doctor's opinion, that I cannot tell the truth from the false. To me, my insane life seems to be the only normal one. And so I sometimes can't see the lies that I'm living in because I'm living in them, and they just feel like reality to me. So sometimes it's helpful to talk some of these through. And so, you know, use the group for that reason. But what are the fears underneath that? You know, I have this lie that I'm telling myself, that this delusion that I have the only solution and she should follow my suggestions of recovery. But what's underneath that? Well, I've got a few fears that come up there. I have a fear of not being recovered myself. I have a fear that I don't have a solution. And again, I've got a fear of being wrong. So I have to start to see that this is the real stuff. This is the root that's driving all of my selfish actions and my attitudes. And this is what I'm putting on the altar and bowing down to, you know, bringing us all the way back to we agnostics. And it says, what have I been worshiping? And I've been worshiping my mind, and I've been worshiping other people, and I've been worshiping, you know, like, all these other things. Well, I can actually see here that I've been worshiping fear because I've been bowing down to it and basing all of my beliefs, my thoughts, and my actions off of this fear, off of this root. So I'm also going to consider in where it says I was afraid, I'm also going to consider any other fears that come up that, I'm going to consider the opposite of these fears or any other fears that come up that I can consider. I'm just going to read this to you because it'll make more sense. So it says, the above fears drive the delusions that result in the attitudes that are behind the actions. Okay, that's what I just shared. And it references that page 62, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, right? And then it says, consider if there are any other fears that should be on the fear list. And we'll talk more about that when we get into our fear inventory, but you can start to write other fears that come up here. Consider the opposite of each fear. If it applies, add it to the list. So you can consider, I have a fear of being, alone, but then I also have a fear of being committed. I have a fear of failing. Do I also have a fear of succeeding? And you can write those opposites in there. Okay, so the last thing that we do in our fourth column here is the harm. Do I see any harm that I caused? Look around the resentment, not just the person in column one, but look around other people who have been involved in this. Look for parents, friends, employers, anyone who might have been affected by this situation. And I will always include, if I have put one of my selfish actions that I was gossiping or talking shit, I'll always put as one of my harms the people's names who I gossip to, because those are people who I'm going to, when we get to step 8 and 9, I'm going to be making amends to them for bringing them in to that kind of a negative space. I'm gonna, we'll talk more about that, but I do write their names down in the harms. But I ask myself about the specific harms to this person. And so judging is definitely a harm. So if you have judging in your selfish actions, if you feel like you've been judgmental, I would put that in your harms. So I looked at my harms with her. I was judging and avoiding and talking badly about her. Now, don't worry about making your amends right now. Just write what your harms are, and we'll talk about that when we get to the time. The other thing that I consider, and this is just a suggestion, you don't have to do it this way, is I also ask myself, what is the ripple effect of this way that I've been being or this situation, like the truth that I've now seen in my fourth column, what's the ripple effect of me being that way in the world? What has that been like? So, for example, let's go back to that made-up example of my father abandoned me. Now I'm punishing men. So down here, I can maybe write in my harm the ripple effect of how I've been treating and punishing every single man that I've met my whole life. That's a harm. So this is the place where you'll write down a specific thing. Like, this is the place where I wrote down for my ex-boyfriend, I wrote down writing that poem and putting it on Facebook. Like, that was a specific concrete harm that I caused. So the harm isn't going to just be like a regurgitation of everything you wrote in your selfish actions, but there might be some overlap. Okay, I know I just done a lot of talking and a lot of flipping around, so I hope that was clear. I want to right now open the call up and have people share. I would love to get in a couple of real-time examples. So let's open the call up at this time, and I'd like to hear if you want the homework to be. I'm trying to decide if I want to add that as a question. Okay, we'll save that to the end of the conversation. Just come on if you want to read one of your inventories, if you want to speak about your experience with doing this, if there's something that you have done that I didn't mention, I want you to share that. And I would love to get a couple people who want to do their fourth column in the realization in real time. Okay. Opening the call up. Who wants to get on?
This is Cammie from Visalia.
Hi, Cammie.
Hi, it's good to hear from you. I missed you. That was very clear and very eye-opening for me. I'm overwhelmed. This is going to take me forever. I have 87 resentments, and I'm only on self-esteem from the third column. have a really hard time getting clear with help with taking with people taking or someone taking me through, and I feel like this is going to take me forever, and I'm not rushing anything. So if you have to leave me behind, leave me behind. This is hard, and I'm frustrated, and I'm overwhelmed. And also what's very clear is that I need to stop because I'm doing all of that stuff, and I have a lot of amends to make, and I've harmed a lot of people, and I've dragged a lot of people on my bandwagon. And I can also see where this is getting very clear, where I'm going to get clear, where I'm going to get some freedom. And, wow, I'm just, I'm not, I, this is going to take some time. I have a lot on my plate. I don't even have anything to share on my inventory because I'm really not where you guys are, but where you are in the third and fourth column, but I can see where this stuff is really going to change me because I've been in the food a lot, and because if I don't take diet pills, I throw up and I overeat, period, and I'm still there, and I feel blocked, and I still feel blocked, and I'm still reading my 84 to 88, and I'm still meditating, and I'm still praying, and I still feel blocked. But you know what? I've written down 87 resentments, causes, target statements, and I'm on number 15 for self-esteem. So I'm working on it. I'm moving forward. And I don't know if I'm done talking.
I don't know if I have anything else to say. I don't know if you have anything else to say.
I do.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, thank you so much, Cami. I just I love your honesty. I love where you're at. And you know, there's two things. I mean, that's kind of one of the reasons why when we started talking about all, you know, the resentment inventories, and it was like, especially your first time going through the BBA, consider maybe not doing a ton of inventories just so that you can actually get through it all and, you know, so that it doesn't become so overwhelming that you get, like, you know, paralysis by analysis. With that said, and you know, we can also talk offline about, like, grouping, you know, and we can talk offline about, you know, just how we might be able to make that list shrink a little bit, because I have a feeling that as you start to get into it, you'll start to see some themes, and you'll be like, oh, my God, these 10 people actually, it's, like, all the same resentment inventory. It's all the same thing.
I'm seeing
like,
that.
You're seeing that, yeah. So let's talk about it, because I have a feeling that we can actually pare that down a little bit so it's not so overwhelming. So know that you know, we can work on that a little bit. But I love that you're continuing with it, and you're doing the work, and that's great. So, yeah, thank you very much for sharing. And let's see if somebody else who is on the line right now, who is in there, who has completed all their third column, let's see if somebody wants to share, and we can get into that realization, and we can get into the fourth column. And Cami, I just want to say thank you for your share, and let's connect after the call, okay?
Okay, thanks for listening.
Okay, sure.
Hi, this is Jan.
Hi, Jan.
Hi. I want to share one or two of mine. And first of all, I want to thank my sponsor because, you know, when I sit with these things, and thank you for reminding us of the tree. That's such a great example. Because I spend most of my life trimming the leaves to make it look good on the outside. Okay, so this one is I'm resentful at. This is one of my exes. I started out the cause saying he was a dishonest, irresponsible user. He didn't act like I thought he should. And then he was deceitful. He was not truthful about leaving me. And she helped me summarize it, the cause, by just saying he didn't act like I thought he should and deceitful. And then under self-esteem, I put, I'm an awesome woman who deserves respect, love, and honesty without condition. And over at the right, fear of being a bad wife, unloved, abandoned. Pride, no husband should be dishonest or irresponsible. Fear of being lied to, clueless, abandoned. Under ambition, I want to be respected. And, of course, fear of being disrespected, unloved, and unimportant. Security, I want to be loved, to be okay. And then fear of being unloved, insignificant, abandoned. Personal relations, husbands tell the truth to their wives. And then fear of being lied to, duped, abandoned. And duped came up a lot. That was when I started to see a pattern, like you were saying. Sex relations. A real woman listens to her intuitive guidance that he may not be right for her. fear of being duped. Oh, fear of being embarrassed. Fear of being abandoned. Pocketbook, no husband should lie to their wife. Fear of being duped, abandoned. Okay, then the realization on some of these, I don't know if I it sounded, Deb, like you had a lot on the realization. You had, mine was shorter. I withdrew and kept information from him. I was not truthful about what I posted online about myself. And then where have I been self-seeking?
Okay, well, so pause for one second. And I also, like, I don't want to, I know that you guys do things a little bit different in L.A., so I don't want to, like, step on toes. And if there's something that really, really works and serves how you guys do it, I don't want to, like, you know, change that. I just am going to share the way that I've been taught, the way that I've been guided, and the way that we sort of do it in San Diego, and then you guys can, you know, as you feel guided, you can kind of do what feels like it's the most serving. So will you go back to your cause for one second?
Sure.
Okay. Will you just read the first phrase of your cause?
Dishonest, irresponsible user.
That was your target, right? It was, or was that the first phrase? That was the first phrase?
That was the first phrase. What I ended up, my summary of the cause was he didn't act like I thought he should.
Right. But the first phrase was he's a
dishonest, irresponsible user.
Right. Okay, so in your realization then, did you have, I've been dishonest to him and others?
Oh, good. Okay, that's, yeah. And, yes. Okay,
and then,
I gotcha.
And then I've been irresponsible to him and others, and I've used him and others. Do you have any of those statements in there?
No, but I'm taking notes.
Okay. So that's kind of how, yeah, go ahead.
What I had totally forgotten was I met him online. I was dishonest about what I posted online about myself. I posted a picture that was like 25 years old.
I love it. See,
don't you love it?
It's so powerful when we actually ask ourselves a specific thing that we're resentful for.
Right.
Because it's like, yeah, I mean, it's always funny to me. It's always funny to me. I'm like, oh, my gosh, I literally have done the same thing.
And it's just so funny, my I'm not thinking of the right word, my avoidance, the BS that I play in my head, it's like, how dare he do that to me? And then it took me some time, some weeks to realize, oh, I was dishonest. The whole basis of the relationship started on a lie. It started by him, me. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. So, I love it.
Yeah.
Yep, that's it. Okay.
So then the irresponsible. So where have I been? Have you been irresponsible to him and others?
That one, I'm going to have to meditate on that one because I tend to be overly responsible. But I'm sure there's something I'm not saying. I'm, you know, more will be revealed, I think.
Yeah, I mean, spend some time. I also don't, like, I'm also not a fan of, like, creating something that's not there. So if you're like, gosh, I'm really, like, checking in and that just doesn't land, I mean, then maybe it doesn't land. I don't want to be like, no, it's just there and you're just in denial. I really don't know. So, yeah, sit with it, but also don't, like, you know, sit there and try to, you know, over-intellectualize it too much.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. And then, I mean, I think Tyler always says this. She's like, if you spot it, you got it. You know, like that's the kind of.
Yeah. Yeah. What I love is when I go over this. Oh, I'm sorry. When I go over this with my sponsor, when we come up with something that just really feels right in my gut, you get that shift, that like, oh, wow, that huge realization. Yeah.
Yes, totally. And that's, and thank you for saying that, Jan, because I feel like, especially for those of us when you're like trying to help someone, it's kind of like, look, I'm going to share some things, but only you at the end of the day can feel inside if that feels right for you or not. And don't just write it down just because somebody else suggested it, because you know inside, and that's a part of us developing that internal guidance. So thank you for sharing that. Great.
And then just to finish it out, the fourth column, I'm doing one or two a week, and I haven't, I'll just do the first two because that's where I am. Self-seeking, my selfish actions. Critical, arrogant, judgmental, know-it-all, better than.
Uh-huh.
And then the last part, the selfish, what better, really helped me was when you said.
So sorry, really quickly. When you are, when you're, because better than to me sounds like an attitude. So when you're in the space of I'm better than you, what are you actually doing? What's your action?
I gossiped a lot about him to my family and others.
Okay.
Gossiping?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
So what you want there are actions.
Yeah, because the better than is actually part of an attitude. That kind of, you can put that on the next section.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then you can put the people who you gossip to, you can put those people's names in your harm section.
Harm, right, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so selfish, what helped me was when you said, where am I feeling like a victim or feeling entitled?
Mm-hmm.
Wow,
mm-hmm.
That gives it a whole, it's like you just put, you know those spotlights that the cops have that are really bright? Well, I'm sure you don't know. I know. You just like flipped on that, you know, overhead sun when there are helicopters, you know, rising over. You just flipped a switch on this one when you said that. Because I've got selfish, how dare you leave me after all I've done for you. That's just, you know.
Oh, I love it. I love it. It's so good.
It's just so good. It's just so, yeah, how dare you. And then I'm calling him a name. It starts with an F. You know, I'm too good for you. One day, and I got this from you today, one day you'll see all that you've lost.
Oh, yeah. It feels so good. I mean, I love writing from that perspective that you're writing from, where it's like, I'm in it. Like, this is what I was yelling in my head at that person. Like, you freaking, I can't believe, how dare you? And you will you're going to just rue the day. Yeah. Perfect.
Yeah. So that's right where I am on that one. And this is just this is so great, Deb. I love the tree when you just, I'm up there trimming, trying to make it look good on the outside, and the roots are just not pretty.
I know. So would you be willing to, for us just to, in real time, just like to finish off this little tree diagram? Would you be willing to go into your delusions and fears?
Sure.
Okay.
Okay. Let's see. Dishonest, the lies I was telling myself that resulted. I was in the delusion that, what comes up for me, this posting a lie online, what comes up for me was I was in the delusion that I looked just like I looked 25 years ago. When we met at the airport, he didn't recognize me, which I think is very funny. And that was a total delusion on my part. So I thought my lie was really good.
Okay, so this is an interesting one because I can kind of see what you mean there, and it's almost one of your selfish actions that you might be able to put is that you were deceiving with your photo.
Mm.
You can actually put that in your actions. You can also but when we're getting into the delusions,
I'm thinking you want something deeper.
Yeah, something a little bit deeper. So go back to your attitude. Go back to one of the attitudes there of whichever one. Attitude good for you, or what was it?
One day you'll see all that you've lost.
Yeah. So what was the other one?
How dare you leave me after all that I've done for you?
Yeah. So exactly. And so, like, if you go deeper than that, just take a moment. Just take a moment and just consider what's underneath that's driving those beliefs.
It's driving what?
That's driving those attitudes.
I'm really feeling like low self-esteem. I don't really deserve. I don't really deserve someone who would be honest with me.
Okay.
Wow.
So that's really powerful, and depending on where, you know, that might end up being I'm afraid. But I actually, like, let's just see if we put that in the delusion. So I'm in the delusion that I don't deserve.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
That he's the best I'll ever get, that kind of thing.
Well, so I'm in, okay, so here it is. I'm in the delusion that I have to settle. There it is.
Yeah, I don't deserve, I can settle.
I'm in the delusion that I have to settle. And then, When you consider that lie, I'm in the delusion I have to settle, what is the fear that's driving that delusion?
Oh, that I'll be alone. That
I'll be alone.
This is so powerful.
It's so powerful.
Because I'm so independent and self-sufficient that I...
Right.
Ooh. To get to that is amazing.
Right.
Wow.
Right. I have
Thank
these beliefs. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you. They just thank you for being so willing to do this, because I know a lot of people are getting help just by you being willing. So thank you.
And, thank you.
And so when you consider your harms, what are the specific harms that you've caused to this person, and looking around the resentment, other people around the resentment?
Well, I definitely gossiped about him. So is that, would the harm be him and the people to whom I gossiped?
Yes. And does he know that you gossiped to him? I mean, gossiped
about him?
No.
Oh, no.
Okay. I mean, because you're not going to make an amends to someone for gossiping if they didn't know. But we're not even in the amends process. So you can just write it down there.
The big thing was to my family, because I wanted to, I got real, you know, support from them. Every time I bagged on him, it was like, especially my dad, he would say, how can a man do that? Because my dad's so
right.
The opposite. I worked that thing for more than a year.
Yes. So that's the kind of what I was saying in the selfish actions of mine with my ex, was I manipulated others' perceptions of him. So that absolutely that would belong in the harm. You know, you were manipulative. You know, manipulative and trying to And then consider this as another delusion, Jan. Consider that you're in the delusion that the person in column one had the power to do different.
You mean he could have been a person in recovery?
Just consider that you have a delusion that he could have done different, that he should have been able to do different, that he should have loved you. Consider, and I'm not saying that that's for this person, I'm almost saying it because that's a very common one that comes up in relationships with, like, our close family members or close relationships, intimate relationships, is that is another one that comes up for people, is just the delusion that the delusion that this person actually had the power to do different.
Oh.
You know, and like, if I was enough, they would have done X, Y, or Z. I'm just throwing it out there. If it doesn't land for you, you don't.
Oh, yeah, you know, with my love, with classic Al-Anon, with my love, he'll change.
Right, right. So there's another, yeah, right.
Got
with
it.
My love,
yep.
Change, yeah. You know, so, like, there's sometimes more delusions. Now, we don't, you know, you don't have to write three or four delusions in there. You can just stick to one. You'll see truth, and that, you know, I'm sure that delusion pattern will come up on another inventory. But I just was, just for the purposes of us, like, eliciting more options that people might be able to learn from, I just thought I'd throw it out there.
No, that's right. And I just want to finish up with saying I want to be so thorough, because I want to have a thorough inventory. My fear is that I might not have everything. And if I'm comfortable with what comes up and it clicks, is that enough, or do I go back and look at it again?
That's enough.
Okay.
That's enough.
Okay, that's what I need to hear.
That is enough. Thank you for asking that, and thank you for, because, yes.
Okay.
And it's so, I had such a powerful experience this last time doing my fifth step, and even as I was reviewing the inventory in preparation to share it with you guys, I saw other truths that I was able to see now looking through it. And I was like, oh, I didn't even write that in there, and I totally see that now. But I saw exactly what I needed to see at the time, and I had an incredibly transformative experience at the time. So absolutely trust what comes through. I mean, you just got very, very deep within yourself, and you just saw some really powerful things, and there was healing just in what's just happened over the last 5 minutes. So absolutely. Yeah. Okay. And you can continue, you know, you can continue to kind of have that, like, God, please help me see the truth about any harms, and maybe something else comes up and you can write that down. But that's a great starting point. Do you have judging on there or being judgmental?
Let's see. Gossiping, deceiving. Yes, arrogant, judgmental. Yeah.
Okay, great. That sounds great. Wonderful.
Wow.
Good
Thank
job.
You. That's transformative. Wow. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, cool. Does anybody else want to do an inventory? What about Stephanie? Stephanie, are you still there?
Good.
Hi.
It's Kimberly.
Oh, hi. Sorry, who is it?
Kimberly.
Oh, hi, Kimberly.
Hi. I'm willing to throw one or two out here.
Yeah.
I have one on God, and I have one on the fellowship.
Okay, great.
Okay, so let's start off with the fellowship.
Okay.
I'm resentful at CA Fellowship in the Valley because lousy recovery, and I feel betrayed. So my self-esteem is I am the queen of CA. I am the most loyal and committed member, and my fear is I'm a bad example, I'm not loyal, lousy recovery, and I'm just like them. My pride is others should see what great recovery I have, and no one should betray me. So my fear is I'm a hypocrite, betrayed, and lousy recovery. My ambition is I want to feel a part of the fellowship, and my fear is I'm alone, different, separate. Fear of being alone, fear of being different, fear of being separate.
Awesome.
And the security is I need to know that I'm not alone in order to be okay, and I need to know that I can make a difference in order to be okay. And my fear is that I feel abandoned, feel powerless, and I feel not good enough.
Yep.
Personal relations, people who say they are in a 12-step program should actually do the work.
Could you read my inventory?
And my fear is I can't walk my talk.
Uh-huh.
So sex relations, a real woman doesn't hold on to resentment. A real woman would be more tolerant and not take it so personally.
And see, so that's that spiritual la-la land. That's that spiritual la-la land shit.
And so my fear is that I'm stuck, I'm intolerant, I'm overly sensitive and judgmental.
Uh-huh.
So the realization is I have been so dry I could start a forest fire. I have acted badly and pretended to be more recovered than I really am. And I have not been there for others the way they needed or wanted me to either.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so my self-seeking actions are I've acted superior, gossip, I'm smug, standoffish, I'm judgmental, I'm harsh, I belittle people, and I'm arrogant.
Mm-hmm.
And then my selfish attitude is you guys don't know what the fuck you're talking about. And my dishonesty is I was in the delusion that I had the right to act and treat others the way I do.
Yes.
And I was in a delusion that I was more spiritually evolved than they are.
I love it.
And so my fear is that I was afraid I would be found out. Mm-hmm. And I was afraid that I am just as stuck and sick as they are.
Awesome. Harms?
My harm is that I have been a lousy representative of Cocaine Anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I've been a lousy representative. And my harm is that I pretty much also have, I can't say I really harmed everyone I've come in touch with, but I've just been a lousy representative. So I've been a bad, you know.
Well, it's like you can't be of real service if you're in judgment, so you haven't really been available to be who God would have you be in program.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if the CA face is coming up, it's not mine, okay? It's like, yeah, you know. So, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Great.
Anything else you think?
I mean, that was great.
Okay. You want to listen to God?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm resentful at God, and the cause is he isn't there for me the way I need or want him to be.
Mm-hmm.
So my self-esteem is I'm the most important child he has. And my fear is that I'm unimportant. My fear is being ignored, and my fear is being unheard. So the pride is others should see how wonderful and special I am. And, of course, my fear is not special, and my fear is being invisible.
So for your pride, is your pride referring to God or is it referring to how others should treat you? Because they can both live there.
Yeah, they should see how deserving I am, that, you know, that I should
right.
be getting God's attention, right, and I'm not.
Right. So, yeah, I want to clarify that for people who are listening because the pride, you can remember, we can talk about pride from the place of, you know, I'm in the director's chair, I'm looking at the stage, and this is the role that I've assigned to the others, and so there's a role that she can make a comment about God, like, no one should make me, you know, no one should not be there for me, which would be like a comment about God. But then she can also make a comment about how the audience should be viewing the scene. So others should see that, like, I'm God's favorite or whatever it is, you know. So,
mm-hmm.
so it can, you can have both in pride. So I just wanted to clarify that. Okay, yeah, go ahead.
Got it. Ambition, I want to know that I'm not alone. I want to know that God has my back no matter what.
Yep.
And my fear is that my fear is being abandoned, betrayed, and let down.
Uh-huh.
So Security, I need to know that I am worth being loved and cared for no matter what in order to be okay. I need to know God will always be there, will always be there in order for me to be okay. And so my So my fear is that I'm unlovable, unheard. My fear is being too needy, and my fear is being undeserving. Like I don't deserve
it. Yeah. Do you have a, in your security, is a possible consideration for the security, like, I need God to, and maybe you already said it, so tell me if you already said it this way, like, I need God to be there in the way that I think he's supposed to be there. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if I'm saying that.
Well, that's why I said I need to know God will always be there for me in order to be okay.
In the way that I, in the way that I, right, you said I need him to always be there for me no matter what, but like in the, like I need God to be there for me in the way that I think he's supposed to be there for me. Do you know what I mean?
Got it. Okay.
It's just a consideration.
Sure.
I need it to look a certain way, I guess is what I'm trying to say. I need God to be, God being there for me to look a certain way to be okay. Or I don't know. I don't even know if that's relevant, or maybe it'll come up somewhere else. But.
Well, it is, because that's what my cause is that he isn't there for me. So I obviously have an idea of how he should be there for me, that he is there.
Right.
That makes
sense. Okay.
And personal relations, is God is always there for his children. God always takes care of his children. And, of course, my fear is not being taken care of, insignificant, alone.
And what's also interesting that just popped into my mind, I don't think I've ever written it this way when I've written resentment inventories on God before, but, like, as a consideration, what about God as my father, God as my, you know, you've got these three different relationships with him. God is your principal and God is your employer. Like, just because I know you're kind of advanced with this work, so I'm just throwing it out there.
And I know, and it was interesting that I picked the role of a child. You know, and that, and I don't know particularly why. You know, I hear what you're saying because I agree with you completely.
Mm.
So I don't know why the child one seemed important.
Yeah. That's great, though. I mean, that's fine, too. So, yeah, anyway, go ahead.
So sex relations, a real woman doesn't ask something of someone that she isn't willing to do herself. A real woman is not a victim. A real woman does her part. So my fear is that I'm overbearing. My fear is I'm a victim. I'm unwilling, manipulative, lazy, and irresponsible because I don't have this relationship with God. I put it all on him. So I'm not doing my part, and the real woman would.
I fucking love that. I love it. Great.
My realization is that I have not been willing to do what I expect God to do. I have most certainly not been there for God and others. I have let others down too.
Okay, great. So I also just want to clarify there, because you did a great job of your cause was pretty much God's not there for me, and so you responded to that, well, have I been there for God and for others? And so, like, no, I haven't been there. Like, I haven't, you know, been available for God to use me, and I haven't been available for others. So that's great.
Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
The self-seeking is my actions is that I'm shut down. I'm passive-aggressive. I use him. I'm judgmental. I'm mean. I blame him. I'm manipulative. I'm unwilling. I'm angry. I take from him, but I don't give.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all one-sided.
Yep.
And then my self-attitude is, fuck you, I don't need you.
Yep. Love it.
And so the dishonesty is that I was in the delusion that I don't need anyone or anything. I can do this by myself.
Yes, and this also might be the place where I'm in the delusion that God being there for me needs to look a certain way. That might actually be where that lives. Sometimes when I'm needing to center myself in my delusions, and I'm saying this to you and really like for the whole group I look at my security statement, because oftentimes my security statement is like points me in the direction of where my lies, where those deep delusional lies are. It's not always the same statement, but sometimes it just helps me get into that place. So, yeah.
And also in the self-seeking, you know, my actions, you know, when I when I'm working with others, I tell them, how do you make them pay?
Oh, I like that.
How do you make them pay? Right, because my attitude isn't going to be, why don't they like me? It's like, fuck you. You know, it's coming from more of an angry, demanding place. It's not a question in the attitude of like, you know, what did I do? No, it's like, fuck you, asshole. You know, so my actions are basically, you know, how do I make you pay?
Yep. And I actually oftentimes will write the word punish because I just, I do. I punish others all the time. Another thing that just because I've worked with so many Al-Anons and food people is that a lot of us actually we take it internal, which isn't any less selfish, but sometimes I overeat over it, or I control, or I fix, or I create chaos. You know, so like those same terms that we've been working with the whole time, I restrict and I act out around food. I mean, that's all stuff that I put into my actions. That might not carry through into my harms and that kind of stuff, but I do want to understand that the way that I eat and the way that I obsess and the way that I control and fix, that's a part of how I'm selfishly acting out. So, yeah, thank you for clarifying that too. What are your fears? What are you afraid of?
I was afraid that I really am alone. But that doesn't sound deep enough either, though. I mean,
well,
that's an easy one, but that doesn't, I don't know, feels like there's something else, too.
I mean, I've been to those places, like with my resentment inventory with God, where I really sit with that, and I really sit with, oh my God, like, what if God really isn't able to fix this in me? Like, what if I really am going to stay broken? Like, there's that agnostic part of me that really, really questions, is this going to work?
Right. So, and I just need to sit with that a little bit more, because that sounds like an easy one to do, but I need to, like you were saying, Debbie, I need to just kind of get down. And the harm is somewhat the same thing. You know, if I'm supposed to be God's agent, I've certainly done a pretty lousy job of it at times. So my harm is that, you know, I've been a lousy representative. I've been a lousy agent. You know, I use the term God. I believe in God, but look at the way I'm acting. You know, so.
Yeah. And for some reason, the word using is coming up a lot there in my mind. Like, maybe considering, like, specific people as you look around the resentment, like specific people or ways that you're using.
I have to sit on that too.
Okay. Yeah. Just throwing it out there. I know what you mean about the fears where it's kind of like, well, that seems like such an easy one, but like there might be a place inside of you that gets it that accesses that kind of like, oh yeah, well, alone, like, you know, that's kind of like an easy one, or is God really there for me? But there still might be within that conversation a place that you access it at a deeper level for one reason or another.
Well, and even just sitting here for a minute, because I'm coming from the place of a child in this three-sided relationship, you know, I understand how to this. I guess the word that comes up is hurt. There's a part of me that's so afraid that if I really, you know, really abandon myself one more time to this, that I'm just going to get so hurt and just let down again that I don't know if I can do it.
Yeah, I feel that, Kimberly, when you talk about that. I feel that fear.
Yeah. Anything else you can think of for me?
Mm-hmm.
can't feel anything coming up yet. So
I feel a deep place of abandonment, like a child's abandonment. There's a little girl inside that feels very abandoned by God.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah. We can talk offline about like in fifth steps. I've spent some really powerful time in fifth steps with some people who I've gone through, where we really take, you know, in an appropriate context. I'm not a therapist or anything like that, but like within a particular context where, you know, we might like take a moment and actually just be with that that age, like that little girl or that little boy. So there's some other stuff like in that process. But yeah, I'm just feeling that little girl in this resentment. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for your time.
Yeah. So we're a little bit after 4 o'clock. Does anybody have a burning desire or like a question that they want to ask before we wrap up the call for today? Okay, so what I'm going to do is I will, in the playback link, I'm going to include the contact information of the folks who have said, who have kind of raised their hand and said, yes, I'm absolutely available to be a resource. And you know, feel free to reach out to me as well, of course. I know that there's many people who do this work very, very well. And if no one, well, what do you guys think? I guess you can email me as well. What do you think about just having the realization as the homework, or let's just do the whole realization, fourth column, and next Sunday let's go over those, and then, I mean, it would be then talking about our fear grid. I mean, we would actually be moving forward right into fear grid. So does anybody have any feelings about that right now?
So, hi, it's Lynn. Thanks, Deb, so much for everything. It was even overwhelming for me, and you know, I've done this. I don't have a ton of experience, but you gave me some more stuff to think about. As far as next Sunday, I just want to throw out that it's also Super Bowl Sunday. And not that I'm that big on Super Bowl. I know for me personally, there is no way I'm going to be ready by next Sunday. I just know it. So I wouldn't mind an extra week.
I was feeling that. Like, that's actually what I started to plan for. So I'm just going to say that you're probably speaking for a lot of people, especially because it's Super Bowl. So if we just make that kind of like a study session, just a working session, and we don't put a lot of pressure on it, that feels a lot better. So so then it would mean that people are just working on their realizations, and they're technically, you could just show up to next Sunday having done all of your realizations. And then your homework next time, the following week, will be to complete your fourth column. You could also just start to work on all of it and come with your questions about both on Sunday. So either
way,
we'll
use
that.
Good.
Okay, we'll use next Sunday as like a workshop time. That's great. And I think that's it. Okay. Well, let's finish off the meeting with the. Let's do our third step prayer. God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help, of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Thank you so much for being on the call today, and let's stay in communication. I'm looking forward to talking to you next Sunday. Take care. Bye.
Bye, everybody.